Hello. You are listening to the Grieving Parents Sharing Hope podcast. We are here to walk with parents on their unwanted journey of child loss, guiding them to a place of hope, light, and purpose, not in spite of their child's death, but as a way to honor his or her life. And now, here is your host, author, speaker, and bereaved parent, Laura Deal.
Hi, thank you for joining me today. I am super excited about today's guest. Our conversation went deep right away, even before getting to the topic of writing, which was also really good. Now, even if you have never thought about writing, or maybe you have and thought that's not something you want to do, I hope you go ahead and listen to this because I am pretty sure there will be something in here that is going to bless you. Now, I know that I said 2 weeks ago that the next 2 weeks would be about pregnancy loss because of October being National Pregnancy Loss Awareness Month, but my second guest, we've just had a hard time connecting, and so that's probably going to come at the beginning of the year, and so I already had this interview recorded. And I was going to plan to share this one with you in December, but it must be God's timing. And I think especially after last week talking to Shelley and, you know, her having Christian Book Academy and having some conversation about writing, I guess God's timing is he still wants to talk about the possibility of you writing. Now, I'm not necessarily talking about writing a book, but let me introduce you to John and then let's just play our conversation. John Dedekis is a writing coach, an award-winning novelist of 6 mystery suspense thriller novels, and a manuscript editor. He is a former White House correspondent and former editor on CNN's The Situation Room with Wolf Blitzer. John regularly leads writing workshops at literary centers and writers' conferences. He is also the host of the video podcast, One-to-One with John Dedekis. Originally from La Crosse, Wisconsin, John now lives with his wife Cindy in Baltimore, Maryland. In his spare time, what little he has of it, is a jazz and rock and roll drummer. Now, I will say that during this interview, my computer fan kept kicking in for some reason. I don't know if you're going to hear it or not. If you do, I hope it's not a distraction for you. So with that, let's listen in on my talk with John Dedekis. Oh, hi, John. A very warm welcome to the Grieving Parents Sharing Home podcast. I'm so glad that you're joining me today.
Hi, Laura. It's good to be with you.
Yes. Now, before we get into the topic about writing as a way to heal, I do want to give you a chance to share your son, Stephen, with us, please.
Well, Stephen died way too young. He was only 22. He was the youngest. His brother James was 5 years older and his sister Emily was 8 years older. They all got along together. They were a good team. He had a great sense of humor, was a funny guy. And he taught himself how to play drums, taught himself how to cook. He was a cook at a high-end restaurant in DC at the time of his death.
Wow.
But he got addicted to heroin, and he went off the grid. He was missing for a week. That was out of character for him, and he was found dead in my car a block and a half from where we lived in D.C., and so that was that.
Oh, wow. Was he still living at home with you, or was he on his own at that point?
No, he was still living. He was living with me. My wife was a choir director in Philadelphia.
Okay.
So I'd go up and visit her on weekends. And Steve and I were, you know, basically roommates, I guess you could say. But we were ships passing in the night because of our schedules. I was still at CNN. He was working as a cook, you know, usually nights. I was working what was my schedule? I was working on The Situation Room with Wolf Blitzer. So that was, you know, a day, early evening kind of job. And so we were together, but not always
right.
Hanging out.
But that left you dealing with cleaning everything out and dealing with all the aftermath of all of that.
No, because once that happens, everybody converges.
Mm,
and so
right,
my
right.
son my son James was in Asheville, South Carolina, and Cindy came back home. Emily, my daughter, was in Belfast, Northern Ireland. She came home, and she was probably, the one who really took the lead in helping excavate his room,
Isn't
because
that
it was.
interesting? It seems like in every family, there's one person that can just kind of do what needs to be done and help everybody through it.
Yeah, I mean, we all worked on it, but
Yes.
Emily was really the one that took the lead. And boy, I haven't talked about this in 14 years. So yeah, you're bringing back a lot of memories. But yeah, it in many ways brought the family together physically and emotionally.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Some families it does goes that direction, and other families it just tears them apart in a way they never thought they would be torn apart.
And that's one of the things I learned during that time. Cindy and I were in the car together, and there was a CD that was on, and a song came on, and Cindy hit the button to advance it to the next track. And I said to her, "Why did you do that?" And she said, "Every time I hear that song, it makes me cry." As it turns out, it was the same song that when I heard it, I would hit repeat because it made me
Yes.
cry. Same
Yes.
song, same emotional reaction. Different way of dealing with it. And I think that was when I realized, I'm not going to be able to fix her. I'm not going to be, and it's just not going to be wise to compare my grief to hers. And I think that's what often dooms a marriage is the comparative grief. Snap out of it. You should be doing it this way. And
Right.
we just never did it that way. And that,
Right.
I think,
That's one thing when Dave and I travel, we talk about how it's like we know there's no wrong way to grieve until your spouse is doing it wrong.
Yeah, you got to be
So,
careful of that. And that
yeah.
we're still together after 47 years, so we
I'm
must
so
be
glad you
doing something.
shared that. Thank you. Thank
Yeah.
you. How long did it kind of take you out of the loop of being at work and being able to function?
I was very fortunate because CNN said, "Take as much time as you need," and they meant it. And I took a month. I had no idea how long it was going to take. But there came a point where I realized, okay, I need to get back on the horse and get back to work, and that's
Because we do get to a point where if we don't, we just start spiraling down and down and down, don't we?
I think you're right, and I must have on some level known that it was time to return, and so I told him when I was coming back, and the. And that really did help, I think, getting back in the mix. To be honest, I left CNN about 2 years after that, because ever since ever, once I got back, it wasn't fun anymore. And Sandy Hook happened about a year after Stephen died, and I was getting paid to watch parents
Oh,
cry over their dead
no.
kids.
Oh.
So it just wasn't fun. I mean, I'd have to remove myself from the newsroom and go and cry.
Oh my goodness, yeah. Oh wow. Wow. Well, before we got on, I did say this is a place where we can be just raw and real. So, can I ask you, where were you in your faith, in your Christian walk before Stephen died? And then where was it after he passed?
Ooh, that's an excellent question. And I was raised Episcopalian, and I taught Sunday school. My mom taught Sunday school. My parents were pillars of the church. But I think when I went away to college, I started to look at that faith as sort of mumbo jumbo. But it was around that time that Campus Crusade for Christ was making a big pitch on the University of Wisconsin campus. I responded because at that point in my life, I was very hedonistic and knew it and was unsatisfied with it. So I think that that kind of experience that if you want to use the word conversion experience, really brought stability into my life. It could have brought legalism into my life, and I didn't let it because I just had enough, I don't know, enough self-control or self-worth that I didn't let others manipulate me because religion can be a cudgel. And so I basically blazed my own trail. The Bible was certainly a helpful guide. I surrounded myself with mature believers. And so by the time my wife and I had been married, golly, probably 50 years, not 50, 35 years or 40 years by the time, a little before 40 years when Stephen went missing. And so we were active in church, but when something that profound happens, at least for me, I did a lot of reevaluating. I went through grief counseling, and that was a safe place to work things through. And I came away without going into a lot of detail, just because it's boring. You know, I came away from the grief counseling experience and I went through the grieving experience, knowing I felt spiritually unmoored, but I knew where the pier was.
Oh, I like that. Yes.
And one of the things that was part of the reevaluation process is I think I became less doctrinaire. It's
Yes.
very easy to get tied up in doctrine, and
Doesn't the death of our child just blow all of that out of the
it
water?
blows it up.
I
It
mean,
blows it up
everything we
completely.
thought we knew about God, who he was supposed to be and who we were supposed to be, what a good Christian is.
And I mean, I'll give you an example. I mean, you know, the evangelicals say that in order to be saved, you need to accept Jesus as your Lord and Savior. Fine. I'm fine with that. But Stephen had a chance to be confirmed in the Episcopal Church and chose not to. Wasn't that he chose not to be a Christian? He
Right.
chose not to, you know, do it that way. And so I never had, nobody ever said this to me, but I knew enough about Christian doctrine to know that his soul, to in order, according to some Christians, his soul would be at risk because he died without saying the magic words.
Yes. Oh.
And I'm thinking, okay, if the Bible talks about God as father, and I'm a father, and I knew he was using heroin, and I didn't kick him out of the house. If, you know, why would I want to worship a God, a father, who would basically banish the son from, you know, eternal bliss
Right.
just because of an infraction, just
Right.
because he did something that, you know, was right for him? And
And
go
as you're
ahead.
talking, I'm thinking about when Jesus himself told the story of the prodigal son.
Right.
I mean, he let the son go his own way. He let the son go into the way of the world, but he also was ready to welcome him back, ran to meet him.
And so, you know, I've got no patience for, you know, anybody who, you know, seems to know exactly where Stephen ended up. I don't
Yes,
know.
exactly.
I can't, I don't, I ha I have, I'm less certain now about my faith because my faith is not resting on doctrine.
Yes. It's like our faith begins to really, when we go through this, it's like our faith begins to rest in who God is, who he really is. You know, when we really discover that God is love itself. And why would he not? I love that we're talking about this. We haven't even gotten to the topic yet, but this is just such a needed thing because I know there are so many parents out there who lose their children through either death by overdose or suicide intentionally, and that just torments them. It torments them. And we know fear brings torment. But the thing is, like you just said, we don't have all the information. We don't know. And why wouldn't God, in his love, in his mercy, in his grace, reach out, even in that final moment of crossing over, and just appear with all that love and say, "Do you believe me now? You know, will you come with me now?" And give our children that last choice in that split second. We just don't know. We don't have all the information. And so we can either choose to walk in torment and fear that man puts on us, or we can choose to walk in faith in the love that God has for us and for our children.
Faith is the word because, you know, you don't know. Faith is not knowing.
Exactly.
You know, there is evidence that there's no
Yes.
God, and there's evidence that there is God.
Oh, yeah.
And so that neither of those things are proof. In fact, I can quickly read something from my book Fake, where my protagonist is at National Cathedral. She's a White House correspondent, And the first lady has died. In fact, the first lady died in my protagonist's presence as she was doing an interview. And so now Lark, my protagonist, is in the White House press pool at the in National Cathedral, waiting for the service to start. And so she's sitting there listening to the organ, playing the prelude. And she said, and this is short, she said, "I wondered yet again about God. As I've thought about the vastness of the cosmos and the complexity of even the tiniest forms of life, I've recognized an amazing symmetry that suggests to me the existence of an intelligent designer behind the universe's intricate design. But that's not proof God exists. It's only evidence. The rest is faith. My faith amounts to one mustard seed, maybe two, but not three. That's because of the events of the past few years, not to mention the past 24 hours. To be honest, my faith is tested the most by the sanctimonious, intolerant certainties of the doctrinaire extremists who use God as a cudgel. Yes, I'm talking to you, Osama bin Laden. But I'm also talking to you, Westboro Baptist Church, and your God hates fags gay bashing. When being brutally honest with Chris, my grief counselor, and myself, I realize that most of the times that I pray, I'm in some kind of a jam. But lately, I'm seeing a certain gratitude emerging. I can now argue with a smidge of confidence that God not only exists, but has probably gotten me out of a lot of tight situations. Or as Lionel, my mentor and boss, often tells me, you're smart and courageous. Or as I often reply, I'm very lucky. All those thoughts and biases were a swirl in me as I settled in for the funeral service for Rose Gannon, First Lady of the United States of America. It's from my book, Fate.
Wow. Okay. Well, I've been
That
trying
wrote
to
it.
write
That
a
wrote
novel
itself.
for a few years. I need some help from you.
I'm
I mean, because that's a
available.
novel. I mean, that's incredible. I mean, that's wow. Okay. So let's turn the corner to the writing. That's a perfect segue, John.
Sure. Thank you.
Perfect. Let's get to our topic. So you were a writer journalist before Stephen passed, but after that, like you said, you couldn't continue as a journalist. So in your pain, you discovered that writing was a place of healing to help you move forward, kind of through and beyond that pain. So just share some of that journey with us.
Well, the journey actually started when I was at CNN in the mid-90s. My sister had killed herself in 1980. So I was already, had already experienced grief and loss, but I didn't really process it in, I think, very efficiently or effectively when Georgia died. But when I started writing fiction, the very first chapter of Fast Track, my first novel, deals with her suicide. I was on the scene that day, and so any writer will tell you write what you know. And so that's what I did. So now, fast forward, and by the time I left CNN, Stephen had been dead a couple of years, and my third novel, Troubled Water, had just come out, was just coming out. And it wasn't until a couple of years later that Bullet in the Chamber, which really deals with his story, came out. But I look back, my books have been out now for 20 years. And so during that time, I've been a writing teacher, a writing coach, a manuscript editor. So I teach people how to do this in addition to doing it myself. But it wasn't until really more or less recently that I've seen that there's, grief as a subtext for all of my novels, because my protagonist, Lark Chadwick, is dealing with death and grief right from the beginning, and that defines her, and it continues all the way through the series. And so I've just been much more conscious of how writing can be used as a way to heal, because that's what I'd been doing, but never really consciously set out to do that.
That's interesting that you were just, it just kind of happened without realizing that's what you were doing.
It's what I call the spooky power of the subconscious. Any writer, whether they're dealing with grief or not, will tell you that part of the one of the components of writing is to dip into your subconscious. And when you ask what if questions, well, what if that, what if? That stirs things up, and it's the act of writing is like dipping a straw into your subconscious. You ask those questions, and as you are moving your fingers, those answers and those experiences are coming through your fingers and onto the page. It's spooky. And I give writing exercises in some of my classes so that wannabe authors can experience that for themselves. It's spooky.
Now, here's a question I wasn't planning on asking, but I just thought of it. So if someone, it's like, I don't, well, like my first book, it was published in Morgan James Publishing, and I had just started. I always knew I was a writer. I've just never finished anything until Becca died. And I started this book with 3 years ago today, I buried my daughter. And
good opening sentence.
Thank you. That book was very, very hard to write. I had been working on it for a couple of years because it immerses you back into that pain.
Yeah.
And so when I ended up with this God Story publishing deal that I wasn't even pursuing, I ended up in a contract. I didn't know you could negotiate contracts. I mean, I just knew nothing about this world. And so I had to finish this book in like 3 months, and it just took everything
Oh,
out of
man.
me. I mean,
Yeah.
I was just wiped out for a couple
Yeah.
months. I was like out of commission. So I think maybe this brings me to my question. So if we have listeners, it's like, I want to write, I know I'm supposed to write, but it just feels too painful. Is it helpful to make it somebody else's story?
I think it is actually because you're slightly detached from it. You know, you are creating a character. Sure, to a certain extent, the character is based on you, but there's a certain freedom when you're making it up and when it is coming from you that you get that to a certain extent, these characters take on a life of their own. You know, Lark, I mean, come on, I'm a guy and I'm writing as a 29-year-old woman. So I'm not Lark, but emotions are not gender specific. So she has all of my emotions, but because of the situations I put her in and you know, the experiences that she's having, there's a certain degree of autonomy that she has that gives a certain distance between her and me. And so I think that does make it a little bit easier to write. You're still drawing from personal experience, but you're not a slave to the facts, because the facts, in a sense, make themselves up as the character grows and lives their life. And you're just, in a sense, articulating it and watching it and reporting it and on and on like that.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's like you're watching things unfold, and it can be a combination of what has actually happened and what you want to see happen.
Sure. You're still in control, but the serendipity of it is that is when the characters kind of take over. And that's, I think, one of the reasons why that kind of writing is freeing, because if you're doing it in almost an automatic way for your first draft, you're bypassing that critical, you know, the scold, you know, your mom on your shoulder going, you can't say that. And, you know, you just let it
It's
out.
like, I
And
can't,
then
but my character can.
there you go. And it becomes this steaming pile of whatever. And then you go back and mold it and buff it and polish it and make it more coherent and all of that. But the first draft is what they call the discovery draft. You're discovering what's in there.
Yeah, so we're talking about novel writing, fiction. So what about like journaling and that kind of stuff? Is that something that you have also done? Is
I've
how
done that
helpful is
since I
that?
was probably about, it's great. I've probably done it for, oh man, since I was maybe 9 or 10. And it's evolved. It's gotten to the point where I'm now doing it first thing in the morning. It's what I consider writing. And I'm basically looking back at the day before. Often it's just the facts, but often also it inspires me to go off on a tangent. Why did I say that? Why do I feel this way? What about this? And so I'm able to go into a little more depth on things. So it's a life examined, both factually and psychologically.
So, John, what do you suggest? How do listeners get started in writing? Does it matter what they write?
No, I mean, and you don't even need to be consciously writing for publication. Writing can be a way of expressing your emotions. Poetry would be a great, way of doing that. There are so many artistic outlets for you to be able to access, what's going on inside. Painting, music, poetry, journaling. There was a guy who took one of my memoir writing classes. He was writing a memoir about the death of his wife, and which had happened several years earlier. And he told me that when he went back to his journals, he said, "I forgot how angry I was," because by getting it down on paper in the moment, it in a sense siphons off some of that emotion that can be toxic and corrosive. So he got it onto the page, but it wasn't until he went back that he realized and remembered what he had thankfully forgotten and was able to, move forward from.
Well, this is really fun because you're just segueing right into my next questions almost every single time.
So you say, so you
Yeah, so
say.
I say. So you mentioned the memoir, writing a memoir, because I think sometimes that's what a lot of the parents want to do because they just want to know
Sure.
that their child's legacy is going to live on. And
Sure.
writing a book will do that. So how do they know what to do with what they've written? I'm sure it depends on the purpose of what they're writing, right?
Well, and I think that a lot of wannabe writers, I think, make the mistake of feeling they have to cram everything into one book.
Oh, yeah,
There
right.
is no magic that says you have to write one book and that's it, or it has to be a memoir. The problem with memoir is you never really know everything that would really make it an authentic, in-depth story. There's just too much that you don't have access to anymore. And so my suggestion, whether you're writing fiction or nonfiction, is, don't feel that you have to write just one book. If you're writing a novel, you can write a gazillion novels. If you're writing a memoir, memoirs are thematic. So it's not an autobiography, it's autobiographical, but it's thematic. And so you can write on different themes. I mean, Nora Ephron made a career out of it, writing essays, writing memoirs. And so just start where you are and write what is coming out, and decide once you have it in front of you where it fits, what it might be. Maybe it is a memoir. Maybe you want to fictionalize it or do both. I don't know. There's so many possibilities. You're not locked into one way of doing it.
Right. And don't forget to ask God to lead you in that. You know,
Absolutely.
because I he's you're writing and there can be a purpose in that writing, and you may not know what that purpose is as you're writing, but he does.
Right. And you may never really know, what God's purposes are, but you be you. And he gave you, emotions, he gave you intellect, he gave you choice. And so do what you think is the right thing to do, because that's what the step of faith is. If you're waiting for God to say, "This is what you should do," good luck with that. Good luck with that. Some people get their guidance that way. Great. I don't, it doesn't come that way for
It's
me.
like just follow your heart. Take a step and follow your heart, and then if the door closes, go a different direction. If it opens, great, keep going.
I'm always amused by the follow your heart statement, because if I followed my heart,
Oh my goodness, that's true.
I'd be on death row.
That's true. That's very true. That is
So
very
be
true.
careful about following
Okay,
your heart.
follow the breadcrumbs. Is
Oh,
that
sure. I'd go for that.
better? Yeah, I mean, that is very true. That is very true. We have to be careful what we say and what we are following, don't we? Yeah. Would you say that you have a life of meaning and purpose that goes beyond what it was before Stephen died now?
Oh, I really do. I'm glad you asked that question, because I think often when a person is in the middle of it, it's like, this is it. This is the end. I mean, where does it go from here?
Right. I have
And
no purpose anymore.
exactly, because everything was sort of guided in that direction. And I think especially when a parent loses a kid, you're living for your kid in many ways.
Right.
And I have to say, and I mean this, I don't mean it to sound cavalier, but I think I'm in a good place. I have found joy. I have found meaning and purpose in spite of what happened,
Yes.
and maybe even because of what happened.
Yes.
I don't know. I mean, I don't see the tapestry from the other side.
Yes.
I don't see, I see the knots. I see the knots and the, you
The
know, all
mishmash of,
the
yes, all the
mishmash.
threads going back and forth and up and down, and yeah.
But something tells me there's a certain beauty and symmetry there too.
Yeah, definitely. So, John, I'd like to hear about what you're working on right now because you're working on a memoir, aren't you?
I have finished up,
Ah.
I think it went through about 12 drafts. I'm now shopping it.
Okay.
And it's looking for a home. And I'm also I've started to expand my speaking business so that, you know, I usually mostly primarily work with people who want to be writers. But I'm expanding that to becoming more of a motivational speaker, going beyond the writing community, but speaking to the bereaved community, people who are struggling with loss and grief, and I'm inspiring them to use writing as a way to heal. And this is applicable whether it's a corporate wellness program, whether it's a grief counseling center or a hospital or a veterans group dealing with PTSD. I mean, grief and loss doesn't just mean the loss of a loved one. It can be the loss of a pet, a job, your innocence, your health. Any number of those things can create that intense, those intense feelings of grief. And so I'm learning how to take that message to a wider community.
Okay. All right. So I saw that the working title of this book is Pivotal Moments, My Path to Personal Integrity. That's fascinating.
Well, it's changed.
I
That's
figured
one of
that's why it's called
that's
a working title.
it's a working title, and I think I've gone through about two dozen of them. The one that's in play right now is Plot Twists, a memoir on writing and living. Which is still, I don't know if it's there yet. And, you know, the publisher, if there ever is
Oh yeah,
one, will
right.
probably say,
They
dude,
have,
this is what it's going to be.
yeah, they have their own say on it, don't they?
They do. It usually is a collaborative kind of thing, but I have agonized over a title. And so you know, yours is as good as any. It sounded great at the time, and it still is.
Right. Okay. Well, John, this has been so good. What is the best way for listeners to connect with you?
Best way is through my website, which is my name.com, johndedakis.com. It's Greek. I'll spell it JOHN, D as in dog E, D as in dog A, KIS as in Sam, johndedakis.com. There, you know, you can find out about my books there, my editing services, my writing, my podcast interviews. And there are several ways through on those pages where you can get through to me, and I'll be able to get the email through my website.
All right, and we will put a link to that in the show notes as well. So, do you have any thoughts for the listeners, word of encouragement, especially in the area of writing, how that can help them work through the grief and the pain of losing their child?
Yes. First, take a breath. Just take a breath and another one and get quiet. And see what's kicking around inside. You can only control the moment. You can't change the past. The future's not here yet, so there's no use worrying about that. So be in the moment and see what the moment is telling you. And if, you know, you're probably a verbal person, you tell stories. That's a natural way of connecting with other people. And so my suggestion would be, you know, either open up a fresh page on your computer or get a note writing notebook and just start writing. And one way of doing that would be set a timer for 10 minutes and say, today I'm, and then just write. Write for 10 minutes. Don't be critical of it. Write and don't even pick up the pen. Just keep writing. Just keep writing and see what shows up after those 10 minutes. And then you can kind of reevaluate it from here. You may already have some ideas, but that's a start.
Yeah. And I have a book that also might help listeners. I'll talk about it when we get off a little bit more, but it's got writing prompts in it that have to do with our grief. And so it's like a word like anger or heaven or time or family or anxious or,
Perfect.
whatever. And so it's just there's a writing prompt for that word. So that can get you started too. And
Perfect.
just write,
Perfect. Yes.
whatever
Yeah.
is, don't edit it, just write.
Yeah, perfect. Writing prompts are golden. You can really cover a lot of ground there. And, don't be impatient with, coming up with something that's going to be, that maybe you have an idea. Be flexible because the first draft is not the final draft. And
Right. I
give it a
mean, what you
chance
write
to.
initially doesn't have to be book worthy. It just
Yep.
has to be your heart, the
Though,
raw and
well,
real of your heart.
perfect. I love that.
Yeah. Oh, well, thank you, John, for being
Thank
here
you,
with me
Laura.
today and just sharing your expertise, your encouragement, and how writing really can help us move forward. But also, thank you so much for sharing your heart as a bereaver with us. I know everybody listening just really appreciates that. So thank you.
Well, you're welcome, and thank you for the opportunity. It's great talking to you, Laura.
Wow, this may sound really strange, but after John and I talked, I just had to get up from my chair. I couldn't stay sitting. I circled the room with thankfulness of the encouragement that I knew it would be for so many of you. I can't exactly put my finger on it, other than the fact that I know God was flowing through our conversation and that it feels like there was a direct purpose in it. I would love to hear from you. If you believe this conversation was something directed to you from God, by sharing it in the comments under the podcast on the GPS Hope website. Go to gpshope.org/podcast/320, the number 320, and scroll down to the comment section. Now, I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. I would love to hear from you. You don't have to be a writer to write. That may sound strange, but I really believe that writing can bring a measure of healing. It allows you to put words on paper that you might not be able to speak out, bringing some order to the inner chaos. It helps you to process your thoughts more clearly. It's kind of like stepping out of the storm to watch it from a distance. It can be like David when he wrote some of the Psalms as a form of lament, having a raw, honest conversation with God, which is a very personal way to grapple with your faith and your relationship with Him. And eventually, you can look back at what you wrote and see how far you have come in this journey, even when you thought, or maybe you even wrote, that you thought it was impossible to have a life of meaning and purpose ever again with your child gone. Writing is a way of honoring your child, even if nobody else reads it. It's like a sacred act of remembrance. It can become your own tangible way of saying you mattered and you still matter and you are still loved and not forgotten. So I want to encourage you, go shopping for a special journal and start writing. I'll put a photo of the journal that I'm writing in now in our GPS Hope private Facebook group, and I would love to see pictures of your journals, your special journals that you're going to be writing in or that you're already writing in. Let's do this together. At the end of my talk with John, I mentioned my book with journaling prompts. Now, it is called My Grief Journey, a coloring book and journal for bereaved parents. Now, don't be put off by the words coloring book. You don't have to color in it, and there is more to it. Along with the hand-drawn beautiful coloring pages, each page has a word that has to do with our grief journey. It has a reflective journaling prompt for that word, and then something to encourage you about that word or topic, and also a related scripture you can meditate on. Now, sometimes words are hard to find when we go to write, but this resource helps you express your grief, honor your child. You can be raw and real with things. I know the first page I colored in my own book was the word fear. And the prompt was something that I fear now. And for me, that's losing another child. And so I could write about that. And being able to write about these things, they're also good prompts. So it helps us take a small healing step at your own pace. Now, I will add that when I just looked, Amazon is selling this book for $13. We keep it on our website for $10, and I will sign it for you before sending it out. So I'm going to put the link to order it directly from GPS Hope in the show notes. Now, of course, you can go to Amazon and order it if you want to, but in the show notes, I'm going to put where you can order it from us directly, and I will sign it. Plus, obviously, the ministry benefits more financially from us being able to sell it directly to you than when you order it through Amazon. And let me just add, if you have this book already, would you please just take a few seconds to give it a rating and a review? Because as you know, we don't put a bunch of money into marketing and promotions. You are our best marketing tool, word of mouth, letting other Pereavers know about the value of this resource. And to make it easy for you, I will put a link in the show notes that will take you to right to the book where you can scroll down the page and leave your, hopefully, a 5-star rating and write just a short review. And I want to thank you for doing that ahead of time. And thank you for being a grieving parent sharing hope by doing this. Now, I'm also going to put a link in the show notes to the GPS Hope private Facebook page. I said, you know, I would put a picture of my journal in there. And if you're not part of that group, I'd love to have you join us. You have to answer 2 questions to be let into the group. If you don't answer those questions, your request will be denied. And this is how I keep this group a safe place for those who are struggling with their faith and for those who are looking for Jesus as their hope and their anchor. Those 2 questions. The first one is, how long have you been a Pereaver, a bereaved parent? And the other is asking you if you are okay with the group being faith-based, which I think obviously needs to be answered with a yes, I'm okay with that. Let's go ahead with this week's birthday segment. Now, I know I go back and forth sometimes on what to say here. I'll say that our child is forever a certain age. I've been saying lately, and I've done it before, that they left us at a certain age. It just, there's no nice way to say it. There's no easy way. It's just, no matter how we say it, it hurts, right? And so I know when I talk about it being that our child left us at this age, that can be kind of painful for the parents who hear that when their child ended their own life. And I mean, that can hurt even more. It can be a bigger sting. When I say our child is forever a certain age, we know that they're in eternity and they're really not forever that age. I don't want to have to explain that every time. I know I'm going on and on here. I'm sorry. It's just, I don't know. I'm going to go back to saying they're forever age, because for us, they are forever that age as long as we're still here on earth, right? So, after all of that babbling, let me go ahead and share this week's birthdays. Hannah McFarlane was born on October 26th and is forever 9 years old. Miles Wolford was born on October 27th and is forever 4 weeks old. Eric Berth was born on October 28th and is forever 29. Dawson Morris was born on October 29th and is forever 19. Cassius John Francois Jr. was born on October 30th and is forever 26. James was born on October 30th and is forever 17 months old. If you would like to have your child's birthday added to our birthday segment, I would love to be able to do that for you. Just go to gpshope.org/birthdays. Fill out that form, and I will add your child to the birthday segment the week of his or her birthday. And Dave will also send you an email to remind you to listen that week so you can hear your child's name. Like John said, there's truly something healing about getting your thoughts and emotions out of you and onto paper. No one ever has to read it. You can rip it up and burn it if you want to, or you can hold on to it like he talked about, like I said, to go back later to see how far you've come on this unwanted journey without even realizing it. Psalm 62, verse 8 says, "Trust in him at all times. pour out your hearts to Him, for God is our refuge. Writing can be a way to pour out your heart before God and making God your refuge. You can run to Him. You can write out what you need to say, how you're feeling, what you're thinking. He's safe. He's a safe place, and it's okay to write these things down. For me personally, writing my grief became a sacred space where I could meet God in my pain, where honesty turned into healing. So I hope that you will do something towards writing, and you'll let me know what you're doing. Share your photo in the Facebook group page. And until we meet again next week, remember to hold on. Pain eases. There is hope.